This is Your Own Best Company, a podcast for people who love to work alone. Hey there, everyone. It's Franklin Taggart, and this is Your Own Best Company, a show for people who love working alone. We value solitude as much as we do money in our bottom line. My guest today is someone I've only met recently, but I think I really like her. And her name is Michelle Nedelec. Michelle is in Alberta, Canada. And we've been talking in our pre-show about cold weather. Welcome, Michelle. How are you doing?
Thank you. I am inside, so I'm nice and warm.
Now, the thing that I was really amazed by when I saw your info form is that I think you've given me the longest list of ways to get in touch with you and things to listen to and things to consume. You've set the record. And one of the things
for those
that
of you who need one option and one option only, you will fail.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Call to action. Call to schmaction. I love it because the thing that it suggests here is that you are someone who has a lot of passions and you follow as many of them as you can. Would that be accurate?
Exactly. And if at first you don't like what you find, keep looking.
Now, has that always been the case for you?
I think so. I have always had an affinity towards doing multiple things at once. And it became especially apparent when I started teaching goal setting classes, because I figured I had to stay on top of my students as far as that pursuit went. And so, yes, I have a long list of crazy antics to my name, and curiosity keeps me going. So,
yeah, I love that. And it sounds very familiar to me as well. Curiosity is my guiding light. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't think passion comes first. I think curiosity comes first. And definitely, passion is an afterthought. But it just really strikes me that you are doing so many things. Like, one of the things that I love here is that I thought I had a lot of podcasts, but you have more than I do by a few.
I have five.
Oh my God. It's so amazing.
At this point of the recording, that may change next week.
Will you have more or less next week?
You never know. Probably more.
Well, I'm really curious about, what was it about podcasting that just really drew you in?
I loved, one, being able to interview people from all over. That was fascinating. Being able to have an interview in London and then an hour later in Sydney without having to go anywhere was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And being able to connect with people that I don't think I would have ordinarily been able to connect with was on my list of things to do. And for the most part during the lockdown, it kept me sane. And I think that's when I kind of birthed a few more, was out of the insanity. It was like, hey, we should have a podcast on that.
Well, that's very cool. So a lot of that was just kind of rebellion against being locked down, right?
There you go. I am a rebel at heart. And in facade, I mean, I don't hide it.
Well, I have a question about that, because early on, it's like, did you have an idea early on in your life that entrepreneurship was something that you needed to pursue? Or was that just kind of an outgrowth of being dissatisfied in kind of a normal way of life?
I think that was a dissatisfaction of my normal way of life. So when I was really young, my brother and sister decided to become entrepreneurial. They were 6 and 7 years older than I was. And they would do the most inane, crazy things. And I'm like, whatever. It all looked way too much like work without enough audience around. And then I realized as I started getting jobs that I was really lazy.
Okay.
So I was looking for the easiest way to do something. And without the credibility of being able to go, hey, I think there's an easier way to do this. You should really try this. I just end up getting fired from things. I would make it easy and not abide by the SOPs and get fired. I got fired. My sister fired me.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. It was, and I went, there's a better way to do that. I'm just going to run the company, make my own decisions. And that's what I did. And then when people came to me and said, hey, there's an easier way to do this, I'm like, sweet, what is it? Let's do it. Rock and roll.
Well,
So, yeah.
the thing that's kind of fun about like visiting your website, awarenessstrategies.com. There are two websites here. You've got one that's awarenessstrategies.com, and then you've got another one that's michellenedelec.com. Talk to me a little bit about like on the awareness strategies page, you've got things like you're a speaker, you're an author, you're a coach, you're a workshop facilitator. You are a meeting leader or an event, kind of a, you have like this polyglot resume that I just absolutely adore. But where did you start with all of this stuff?
You got the bingo card of careers.
I relate. I totally relate. Free
So
space in the middle.
my entrepreneurial journey started when I was 23, and my partner at that time, who's now my ex, we decided to start not one but three new businesses. So he ran a restaurant up in Inuvik in the Northwest Territories. And then we opened up an electronics store, a tanning salon, and a bed and breakfast all at once.
Oh my gosh.
And go big or stay home. And he's like, you're smart, you can do this. And I'm like, you're crazy. And it was a ton of fun. We learned a lot. Probably not the best idea on the planet, but we learned a lot.
So it was a tanning salon, an electronic store,
Electronics
and what
store
else?
and a bed and breakfast.
And a B&B. Now these were all in the same building.
Yeah.
Now that does sound like a small town kind of an enterprise.
It
I
was a really
grew.
big building, so we had to fill
Well, that's just
it.
it. I grew up in a small town in Wyoming, and I remember like, the cafe where you could get your palms read, and you could like, if you needed a room, there was a hostel upstairs. It's like weird stuff, weird combinations of things.
Right. Well, it was a great building because the front on the bottom was an electronics store.
Yeah.
And then there was kind of this midsection where we had the tanning salon. And then at the back, at the back there was an upstairs and it went to the bed and breakfast. And the front upstairs was where we lived. That was
Yeah.
our house. And then next door was the restaurant. And then upstairs from that was the living quarters. And so when we moved out of the living quarters, the staff that we would bring in for the restaurant ended up using that as their staff housing.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of space,
And it was
but
pretty
it was pretty
isolated
nice,
community too, right?
right?
So
Yeah.
having the ability to house your staff was probably a pretty important thing
Yeah,
for
nobody
the
wants to
food
go through an
business.
8-hour commute every day.
Oh no, not at all. I know I don't.
Makes
Anything.
Toronto's commute look good.
Yeah, anything more than 10 minutes and I'm out of there. But so that got left behind with the relationship. And then what?
And then we went into the world of now what?
Okay.
So came back. Well, and it was funny because I actually went up there initially to do a 2-year stint as a dental assistant so that I could go to Saudi Arabia, so that I could go to South America, so that I could come back to Canada and challenge the dentistry exam and be a dentist without having to go through 7 years of university.
Oh,
Didn't
wow.
quite work that way. So the insanity started before that, and then it kind of accumulated. But long story short, we did a calculation a little bit ago, and I've had 28 career pivots.
Oh, yeah.
So I was
Right there
pivoting
with you, my
long
dear.
before
Right there with you.
pivoting was cool.
I stopped
And
counting at 21, and that was quite a while ago.
in the whole goal setting thing, so I was coaching and doing executive coaching, things like that. And I decided that I wanted to see what it was like to be a forklift operator. So I got my forklift operator certification just because I could and passed it on the first try, which was no fun at all because I'm like, can I do it again? And the instructor's like, you're making the guys look bad enough. No,
Oh
you
no.
can't do it. Because I was there in 6-inch stilettos and 1-inch nails and having a great time. I'm like, what are you doing here? Why? Is it for
Glammed
fun?
out and running the forklift. I love it.
Right? Yeah, I had fantasies of working at Costco for like 3 hours at a time, and I went, no.
See, I think there's a horror movie theme there.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the forklift operator
But
that
yeah, the whole
you'd
idea of
wanna.
me working a job was like, no, that's not going to happen. And the poor manager, could you imagine? It's like, you want to do what? No, you can't just come in and do that. No, I probably would have been better than anybody else because I was so enthusiastic about it. But you
Work
know,
out,
now my
doggone.
new fantasy is doing window washing on skyscrapers. I want to go up
Okay.
on a skyscraper and do some window washing, not because
You
I
can
want to
have
wash the
that
windows,
one.
just because I want to.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go with you on that one.
I have rappelled down a sky rise before.
Oh, have you
That
really?
was fun.
I've only rappelled on rocks. And they were easy because they're kind of rough and you can get a good foothold on on those slippery windows after you've cleaned them.
Yeah, we just kind of went down. So again, I was in 6-inch stilettos at the time, so I wasn't really doing a whole lot.
So are there things that you don't do with stilettos?
Swim.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll give you that one. So pretty
Although
much
my
it.
cousin did send me a picture of a pair of scuba fins with a 6-inch heel, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think so.
Now, do you have stilettos on right now?
I don't.
Okay, cool. So this is another thing that you do without stilettos.
There you go, podcast.
Yeah, well.
Gotta get comfy.
Top up. Thank you very much.
Say so much.
So, Michelle, I'm very curious then. It's like you've been willing to try almost everything and you've found some really cool ways to contribute. Now, one of the things that you touched on a little while ago, and I'm trying to remember the language that you used, but it was something to the effect of, explore those options that just seem absolutely ludicrous, but they actually might work.
Oh, absolutely. So one of the fun things that I like doing is when people go to pivot their businesses, oftentimes they'll go like, I'm really good at this thing,
Yeah.
but it just bores me to tears now. And I'm really fascinated about this other thing, but it doesn't really have anything to do with each other. So being able to create companies where there's a niche for what somebody does, or at least branding position to be able to help them to do the thing, to me is fascinating. And you
Yeah.
can pretty much take any two obscure things. Somebody wants to be a hairdresser and a rock climber, and how do you create a business with the two? Because, you know, rock climbers aren't exactly known for their hairstyles.
Well,
But
they,
there's
yeah,
a,
not
you know,
usually.
how can you take those two fascinations and be able to bring them into one? And sometimes it's like, well, there's got to be a way. How can we do it? And maybe it's the aesthetics of the shop. Maybe it's being able to help people to have some form of exercise while they're getting their hair done, or, you know, learning about rock climbing, or maybe it's having a rock climbing wall for the kids while
Yeah.
mom's getting the hair done. Like, just start thinking about how could we, if we wanted to, be able to bring these two together, and how do we make it marketable? It's not just that we have these inane ideas and they're not marketable. It's how do we actually use them to become marketable? And it's often the more inane ideas that people have, the bigger and the better that we can make the businesses.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
One of those life mysteries that I find fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about, is there kind of a tried and true process that you use to help people in that discovery, or is it just something where you show up and they show up and you work together until it happens?
It really is a matter of we show up, because oftentimes I'm looking at them for their level of enthusiasm. So oftentimes people will talk to me about what they do, and it's like, wah, 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 wah. That sounds awesome. Well, what else do you do? And then all of a sudden they'll start talking about their rock collection. It's like, it's amazing rocks and they're fantastic. It's like, okay. And so why haven't we done part of that with this, and what's going on there? And it really is a discovery process, because I want to be able to get to their level of enthusiasm, something that excites them, and being able to bring in the practicality of a business that's marketable, profitable, and quite frankly, easy.
Yeah. I'm very curious how you find the clients that you serve. I mean, it's like you are in a lot of places, and is there a tried and true strategy here, or is there something that you do kind of uniquely to attract the people that you want to work with?
I think it's just pure insanity. It
Excellent.
doesn't.
I know that school.
It's just really thick layer of icing on that, on everything. And, so it doesn't matter really what they find underneath it. So, to give you an example, I'm taking a comedy course, and one of the exercises was talk about something you love. So I'm like, love podcasting. So I talked about my podcast, and somebody goes, way to self-promote. And I went, right? Oh,
Yeah.
perfect. So then they're all going, well, what do you mean you have five podcasts? What are you doing on the podcast? And that sounds really fun. And it was just you asked, so I brought it up, and there you go. And inevitably somebody from this one will go, hey, where'd you get your forklift operator's license from? Like, they just, it comes from somewhere, anywhere. And then maybe that person that goes and gets their licenses talks about me, and then they come back and go, hey, we need some executive help on this thing,
Yeah.
because somebody got their operating license and got a job with them. And it just kind of comes around full circle eventually.
Now it sounds like that you've worked with a variety of people, like at every level and with every kind of curiosity that I can imagine.
Well, and I think that's what makes a good business coach,
Yeah.
because it's, I mean, there are, don't get me wrong, it's obviously if somebody has, 28 years experience working with Google, they're going to have a specialty in Google marketing. I mean,
Yeah.
that's just a given. But to have, 28 pivots in business, I can relate to everybody in their circumstances and in their business, which allows me then to walk into a room full of people that maybe they have a certain level of diversity, or maybe they have a certain level of experience in business. So
Yeah.
typically trades guys will be really good at their trade, but the business acumen thing just kind of isn't their thing. So to be able to pull on examples from tradespeople, from industry, from, my dad's work as an electrician, to be able to weave the concepts into practical stories from my experience, it allows other people to be able to see things in a way, or understand things in a way, that maybe they wouldn't have understood it otherwise.
Wow, cool. So you've got an encyclopedic knowledge through experience of everything that you've ever done now comes into play when people are presenting their situations, right?
Well, yeah, and it's, nothing is off bases. And the way that my brain works too is kind of fun, because they come up with an idea and it'll trigger something else. So somebody could say something like they're a dressmaker, and I go, and then all of a sudden my brain goes back to my mom and her making our clothes and embroidering and doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things with equipment that I think my dad built for. She'd have an
Oh,
idea, and
yeah.
he'd just kind of create this weird, wacky stuff. And so all of a sudden, I have experience in the dressmaking world that I can have a conversation with them, even though I've never sewn a dress together before in my life,
Very
or a shirt for
interesting.
that matter, pillowcase.
One of the things that strikes me here is that it seems like to me that you must be the kind of person who has no gap between idea and action. It's
It
like
depends.
there's no hesitation, really. Do you ever
It's a slow
hesitate?
hesitation.
Oh, okay.
Well, is it a slow hesitation? I
Or
guess
is
it's
it
a fast
delayed?
hesitation compared to most people.
Is it the hesitation happens after the first action,
It's
that
like
kind of a thing?
after I've landed up from jumping out of a plane, it's like, hey, anybody ever go skydiving before? It's like, yeah, you just did. It kind of is. So we used to laugh when I was younger that I had, apparently in the world of psychology, having taking immediate action on something and just going, hey, I had a compulsive urge, had to do it. Compulsive urges in the world of psychiatry are not good. But in my life, they were predominant.
Okay, fair enough.
Was like, okay, they were on the good side. I mean, I didn't do too many things wrong, other than according to my mother, which doesn't count. So which is, it was way more important to have an experience and have fun than it was to be good.
Now, another curiosity that I have about your situation here, with all of these different interests and all of these different ways of being found, how do you manage to promote all that you do?
Well, if you follow me on any social media, it's like, what is she doing? So a lot of people will say you have to have this consistency in your branding and, promote one event at a time and do this thing. Like, in my experience, I don't really follow people that closely to figure out what they're doing, when they're doing it, and how they're doing it, and whether or not they're building up to something. That seems a little, 2016-ish to me.
Yeah, you're probably
And
right
now
there.
it's just, I see something. Does that interest me? Great. If not, I just keep scrolling and find something that interests me. So I figure if I have 16 things that I'm promoting and you scroll past 15 of them, okay, those 15 didn't interest you, but that one catches you at the end. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, let's go do that. So I don't limit myself to the amount of things that I'm putting out. So
Yeah.
we can put out three business ownership podcasts a week. Sometimes I put out a little blue pill for business and a happy to offend you podcast and a 7 to 8 podcast. And I'll do some Facebook lives and I might be doing some affiliate promotions for somebody else. So that's
Yeah.
like six promotions in 1 week. And you just figure if you like it, great. And if you don't, you scroll past it and it's not that big of a deal. It's especially in the world of social media, because nobody goes
Yeah.
back to my wall and goes, hey, you're doing a ton of different stuff. They just follow
No.
their wall and see which ones are interesting to them. So,
I would compare it to the ethnic food aisle at the grocery store. It's like I always stop in there, even though I don't need anything, because there's always something interesting to find.
right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like it's the most colorful aisle in terms of packaging, and it's got the most variety, and it's got all these different things that you wouldn't otherwise try.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
It does. And as long as you have an inkling of what it is I'm talking about, you're probably like, what are you doing?
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your different podcasts. You mentioned the Little Blue Pill for Business and Happy to Offend You. I love the titles for both of those. But let's talk a little bit about what was the first podcast that you put out?
Was the Business Ownership Podcast.
Okay, and that one's still going on. We just had a chat on that one the other day,
Yeah.
and I was delighted to be your guest there. So, tell me a little bit about how that got started. Was it just something you wanted to do?
Yeah, well, it was so at the time, so that was probably about 4 years ago or so, I want to say maybe. My executive coaching was primarily working with people who wanted to be able to grow and scale their business, getting out of the kind of the startup phase and into the growth phase, what I call the growth phase. And to me, the growth phase of business is where you start to implement systems. You're hiring people, you're putting in the processes and procedures. You have to get out of the mindset of, I have to do this all myself. And how do I get somebody else to do this for me? And it never leaves, depending on what stage you're in. But being able to kind of go through that growth phase and then eventually the nirvana to me of business is being able to scale it where basically you're just throwing money at your problem.
Yeah.
So you can then, you your systems are so tight and so predictable that you can put out Google ads and you know that if you put $10 out, you're going to make 12 or 15.
Yeah.
That's the nirvana of business to me. And because then you can sell it and you can sell it for a ton.
Yeah.
And then you can make even more money because now you have some capital to be able to start
Exactly
another
right.
business and do things. So clearly, I'm not against having multiple ideas in one's business life. So the idea for me of the business ownership was being able to take your idea of whatever it is that you're doing and be able to train other people to be able to take over it so that you're not in your business anymore. And you're coming up with ideas because
Yeah.
to me, the creativeness of an entrepreneur isn't their ability to be able to go from conception of an idea into manifestation of the idea. It's to be able to then walk away from said idea and go and do it again.
Yeah.
Because there's certain people that are creative that come up with business ideas and other people that are very tactical and want to and tactile and just want to do the thing that you've created. It's like, they really just want to put the pieces in place and systemize what you're doing, or, you know, take your way of doing something and replicate it and do it over and over again and feel like a master because they can do the thing that you've introduced them to and they do it well now.
Yeah.
And having the ability to do that isn't innate to most of us.
Yeah.
It is a very arduous process to give up our baby to somebody else and say, here, go raise them and raise them the way I want you to.
Yeah.
So that I'll just manage from a distance. It's kind of like giving our kids to teachers, but we have some control over them.
It's more like giving them
teachers.
To a surgeon. Here, take my kid, make something out of it.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about it? I think one of the things that I love about the way that you kind of, I don't know if it's a tagline that you've got, but it's about the emphasis on owning the business. I mm-hmm. love that. I think there's a distinction there between a lot of people who start businesses and those people who, you know, are successful. The people who are successful just have a deep sense of ownership mm-hmm. of all aspects of it. You know, whether they're actually carrying out the tasks or not is a separate thing. But I think for a lot of the people who listen to this podcast, it's like a lot of us started business reluctantly just because we had to, because that was the only way that we could actually make a living having the lifestyle that we wanted, right? So there's a step, though. There's a phase that a lot of us go through where we really have to step in to being the owner of the business. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that distinction?
Absolutely. So typically when people will move from an entrepreneurial role into, or not an entrepreneurial role, an employee role into an entrepreneurial role, there is a huge mindset shift that happens. And this is the premise of the book I wrote, The Business Ownership Mindset.
Yeah.
And it's understanding how we go from consumer into employee, into potentially management, into potentially commission, into entrepreneurship, ownership, and then selling. And there really is a very distinct moment. Even if somebody's been a CEO of huge corporations, they've managed billions of dollars worth, they take their buyout and they go and start a franchise maybe, they too will have an issue calling themselves the owner or the CEO. They're like, oh, no, I just had this little idea and I'm just doing my thing. It's like, no, you run a business. you're a business owner. You're an entrepreneur. You can call it whatever you want, but it's your baby and you have to own it. And it becomes kind of terrifying for people. But to me, that's the tendering process of being an entrepreneur, is to go, you know what? I am all that in a bag of salt and I'm bringing it out to the world. Now, you don't have to come across that way because it's just rude and obnoxious sometimes, but but you have to own it. You have to start to figure out how to promote yourself, not just your ideas or your thoughts. So there's this premise in coaching and behavioral change where if I am something, it's hard to change. If I have something, or if I do something, it's a little easier to change. If I have something, it's a lot easier to change. So to say I'm a runner, I run marathons. It's very difficult for most people to say I'm a runner. It's like, oh, I jog. It's like, dude, you move faster than walk. It's all the same thing. It's just faster, slower walk. Running, you're still a runner. But they will go, I have runners. Okay, I can start there. I do run every day, you know, and I've even been in some races. Okay, well, dude, you're a runner then. Like, you got to own that. Same thing happens in business. It's like, well, I have a business license. Well, I do send emails and promote my business. It's like, yeah, you are a business owner.
Oh, yeah.
But when you can own that and you say, this is who I am and what I do, it gives you that much more power to be able to change the circumstances around you. So in that, you're no longer susceptible to the market, to the, you know, the limitations that happen. It's now you get to choose how you want to play the game, knowing kind of the rules. So a lot of us might have grown up playing Monopoly and going, oh, those are the rules of the game. It's like, no, those aren't the rules of the game. Those are the suggested rules of the game. And if you've ever played Monopoly in our house, you know the real rules of the game, because there's side deals going on. People are hustling each other. That's the real game. And it's being able to own that I run a business, I own it, I get to do what I want when I want, which means I get to decide who my clients are, I get to decide how I talk to them, I get to decide who I sign up, who I fire, all that kind of fun stuff. And there's the rules of the game change. You are
Yeah.
no longer an employee. Everything, if you do anything the same way you used to do it, you're going to fail as an entrepreneur. You have to learn that everything is complete 180 here. The rules of the game are different. So things like you do not report to your clients, do not do your email first, do not wait for people to tell you what to do and how to do it in your business. All of those things will kill you. They'll
Yeah.
make you very successful as an employee, but they will kill you as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Wow. Knock me on the side of the head, would you?
Right? And it's so much fun. So when you get into this idea of ownership, it's like, oh, okay, I don't have to do the things in my business, but I'm still accountable for everything that happens within my business,
Yeah.
which is why a lot of people go, oh, but you can't have typos, you can't have this, you can't have that. And I'm like, you can totally
Yeah.
have typos. I always say, hey, if you're the first person to find typo, you get the present. We put those in there intentionally and hoping somebody would find them.
Well, I love the fact in the book that you focused on mindset as a starting place. And I really feel like that, what you've just described is so true for so many people. And I can think of a dozen people right now that I'm working with that are in that place where they haven't yet allowed themselves to have it. And they're discounting it and they're running away from things that they think they need to do, and they're running away from what they think marketing and selling is, and they're saying that they have imposter complex, which, for most people is a fairly common experience.
We all do.
Oh, I think so.
Let's just get that
Yeah.
straight in the morning. We all have it. Get over it. And it's like, yeah, okay.
I just think it's a part of a larger cycle. It's a part of a growth cycle. So it's okay. It's good. It's keeping you on your toes, but don't let it stop you.
Exactly.
Don't let it stop you. There's still a diving board there. There's still water waiting to receive you. Jump. It's all good.
Exactly. It's like if you think about if you put your kids into dance lessons when they're little. Right? They're going to be a ballerina. They're going to be whatever.
Yeah.
As soon as they put the tutu on, they're a dancer. Like you're going to dance class and this is what's going on. And now you're in dance. And it doesn't mean they're, working for the Russian ballet. It just
Yeah.
means that they're taking ballet classes. And the same thing happens with us. No matter what, we're in business. We're business owners. It doesn't mean we own Google. It just means that we have a business and we have a responsibility to play the game to some extent. So the way I like to simplify business is it really comes down to three pillars. It's your marketing, sales, and fulfillment. But
Okay.
that can be as small as a three-legged stool that you sit on.
Yeah.
Marketing means I'm talking to somebody about my business. Hey, Franklin, I have this idea. I'm thinking about, building binders. It's binders. What are binders? Well, when you have binders. Yeah, or when you have plastic, a bunch of paper, and they all get dog-eared, you want something to protect them on the outside. I'm thinking of this hard plastic thing that you can hold them on the inside. And he goes, wow, that's a great idea. I think I'd like one. Now
Yeah.
we're into sales. Awesome. Well, I have this, prototype. You want to try it and give me a testimonial on it and see what you like. Yeah, I'd love to. As soon as you hand them over that binder, now you're in fulfillment.
There you go.
That is the most simplified form of business ever. You have
Yeah.
marketing, you have sales, and you have fulfillment. Period. End of story. Well, actually, as soon as he gives you the money, then you're in
Yeah.
sales, and fulfillment. So it's understanding that that's very simple transaction is a business transaction, and it's very different than being a commission salesperson for somebody else because they come up with the marketing, they come up with the fulfillment. All you have to do is that little part in between with the money.
Yeah.
In your own business, you have those three components. And as soon as you have those three components, you're in business. It doesn't matter if you're selling rocks to the neighbors or whatever it is, you're
Yeah.
in charge of marketing, talking to people about it, converting them, taking cash, and giving them something in exchange for that cash. You're in business.
So those three pillars are three legs of the stool that you're talking about: marketing, selling, and fulfillment. What does it look like if one of those is hobbled or missing?
Then you're not in business.
Okay.
So, one, if you're taking money and you haven't talked about what you do, I don't think that's even possible.
Yeah, I'm
I
sure.
have
I
yet
mean,
to figure out how you take money from someone. I think
that sounds
that's
like
the
something a
stealing.
government kind of a program is.
Exactly. That sounds like stealing. You can have marketing, and not have sales and not take money, but then that's just a hobby. You're giving people things without having money. So that's a hobby. That's not a business. And you can talk to people and take money and not fulfill on it, and that's theft.
Okay.
So we're not really like you have to have all three of those things to have a business. But it can be a lemonade stand, it could be selling rocks to neighbors, it can be Google.
Yeah.
And we just add levels of complexity onto it after that in order to make it bigger, better, more fun in whatever way we see fit.
Very cool. I love that simplicity. I'm intrigued by the area of fulfillment. I'd love it if you'd say a little bit more about fulfillment and how that shows up.
Absolutely. So with a consultant, fulfillment can be super simple. It can be, hey, come over here. I have this water dripping over here and I don't know where it's coming from. If you can figure it out, I'll give you 10 bucks.
All
Awesome.
right, fair
I will figure
enough.
out, hey, look at that pipe up there.
Yeah.
It's leaking from up there. You have fulfilled on your contract, you get your 10 bucks. That is a very simplified form of a consulting contract.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be that you're giving a widget or a thing. It can be a service, it can be consulting, it can be an idea. Ideas, in fact, are probably one of the most expensive forms of fulfillment in that ideas are worth a lot
Yeah.
when we position them properly. So the whole idea of being able to deliver on what we've promised for somebody is can be a little more nebulous at times
Yeah.
when it's service provided rather than, hey, I'm going to sell you this cup and you're going to get a cup that looks exactly like this, feels like this. It's going to be the exact same cup. And I think it's important too, when we're creating kind of a savvy business, that the better we can articulate what somebody's going to get and match up their expectations for what we're actually delivering on, then we have a much more successful business. That way, we get other people giving us referrals, which is fantastic because now we have other people doing our marketing for us,
Yeah.
which is again the nirvana of business.
And I can think of so many different businesses that I've worked with where fulfillment was the place where the fall down happened. And they always said that their problem was marketing and sales, but they were actually doing the marketing and sales quite well. But when it came to fulfillment, there was a gap, and that gap was the thing that ultimately sealed their fate. And I don't think that we think about that as much as we think about sales and marketing. And I'm really, really glad that you brought it up. Can you talk a little bit about, let's move to another podcast. Talk to me about Happy to Offend You.
Yes, I'm happy to offend you. It's a lot of fun, actually. And I think a lot of people don't get that it's okay to offend other people. I think the culture right now is bringing this up in a way that it hasn't been brought up before. But I think people have always been afraid of offending somebody else or being offended. We play nice, we're the nice guy, we're afraid of conflict, all that kind of fun stuff. But really, in order to be successful in, what am I going to say, life, is that we have to get in touch with ourselves and who we are and understand that we have a certain special, as in French would say, je ne sais quoi. It's a little I don't know what. And it's your thing, it's your spice, it's your magic that you bring to the world. And parents in a dysfunctional family will often shut down certain aspects of their kids that now their kids think it's bad and I can't bring that thing up. And the funny part to me is it doesn't matter what it is. So really smart parents can shut down an athletic side of a kid. And so they go, oh, being in sports is bad. I should be more book oriented. In an athletic family, they can shut down the book aspect of a kid and go, come on, get outside, go find some friends, go do something. You don't need to be stuck in the room by yourself. And we think that's bad then. And it's like, well, like I'm still a kid, I'm still doing the thing. Why is it bad in this family and good in that family? Why is it good in this family, bad in that family? And it really just comes down to conditioning and culture and all those crazy, wonderful things. And as we grow up, one of my favorite quotes is from To Kill a Mockingbird, where the father says to Scout, childhood is what you're going to spend the rest of your very life trying to overcome.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
Oh, no.
When we get that that's all it is, and they're not right, they're not wrong, they were just doing the best they could, thinking, hey, you know, maybe you'd have more fun if you had more friends. And the kid's going like, I'm having a blast. I am in a wonder world of books. This is fantastic. And the other one's going, hey, maybe you'll be more successful in life if you get, you know, an education. And the kid's like, I'm going to play for the NBA. I'm like, I don't care. This is going to be fantastic. I'll read books after. It'll all be good. When we can encourage that kind of behavior, it's great. When that kind of behavior in us is not encouraged, it becomes more arduous. But when we can get in touch with that and realize that, hey, somebody's going to be offended if I go play sports all day, and somebody's going to be offended if I read books all day, I'm just going to go and do what I do because it's super fun.
Yeah.
And other people going, oh yeah, but that doesn't affect other people. Well, yeah, of course it does. if your spouse spent all day reading a book and didn't go to work, all of a sudden you're like, hey, that affects me.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, one of the funniest things, I love to tease my spouse that he's an engineer. He's not so fun of that, but
yeah,
it's true. He does act like one. And there is a stereotypical kind of behavior set of them. And when they start thinking about things and problem solving things, they shut down every sensory perception that they have in their body, and they are solely focused on the problem at hand.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's hilarious. And some people get really offended by it. And I'm like, you can get offended by that if you want to, or you can just accept the fact that that's the way they operate.
Yeah.
Nothing they say should be taken personally, because it's all very matter of fact. I walked into a room one day, this was hilarious. We're going to a dinner. It's called Dîner en Blanc, which is dinner in white. And so I had a white shirt, white pants, kind of looking very Miami Vice-ish, to get an 80s reference there. And Brad looks up from what he was doing, goes, hey, you look like the Michelin man. And that's why engineers get slapped. I could take offense to that, but that's not what he meant. He meant I'm wearing all white. That's all he meant.
Yeah, there wasn't even a single entendre with that one. It's just like, yeah, it was just an obvious fact, wasn't it?
Right.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
So wow. It's to me, the whole idea of happy to offend you is understanding just because you're offended by something doesn't mean you need to be offended by it. And if you understand why other people aren't offended by what they do or who they are or what they've said, then it creates better connections with people, right? If we can get into the mind of an engineer and realize that what they're saying is just point blank, it's got no meaning, it's got no innuendos, no entendres, no nothings. They're not going to catch on to your jokes because they don't get the entendres. It's like, it is just straight up. That was it.
Yeah.
Then you realize, oh, okay. Well, all we're doing is problem solving here. It's like, hey, you're wearing all white. Yes, I am.
Too much fun.
Thanks, going on.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
So I like to tease that I like to interview people like comedians and comedy shop owners and transvestites and midgets and Irish redheads, people that you know that just naturally offend other people by existing.
Yeah.
I can understand that, you know, it is absolutely okay to be you in whatever way, shape, or form that is, and have a conversation around it, then, you know, life's a lot more fun.
Well, that comes through, that truth comes through in almost everything that I've seen that you do. That, you know, just get out there and fly your freak flag and let everybody else, you know, deal with it.
Exactly.
I'd like to end on one of the areas that you are a speaker, a professional speaker. You have a podcast that's about professional speaking, the 7 to 8 figure speakers series. And I'm really curious about what are the things that you just absolutely love to talk about in your talks?
Me, entrepreneurialism is the big one. And it's understanding. So my mission in life is to rock the world, shake the foundation of dependency, and move people to stand on their own. And
excellent.
I think that entrepreneurial Ness is the best way to do that, because when you can take full responsibility for your income, the way you spend your day, the providing for your family, providing for employees, providing for the impact that you have in the world, you have shaken the foundation of dependency, and you're going to move people around you and inspire them to do something different, bigger, and better with their lives. Because I think we all have so many talents and so many interests and so many passions. It's like coming back full circle in the conversation. When you're curious about something, you get to find your passions, because until you go and do the thing, you may not know that you're even interested in doing the thing.
Yeah.
It could be in real estate. It could be in playing the saxophone. It could be whatever, but you don't know until you're curious about it. And then you go, wow, I'm actually really good at that. This is really fun. I could totally do this. And then you get jazzed and everybody else around you gets jazzed. That's where the fun comes. And if we can all tap into at least some of that in ourselves, like, the world's an awesome place to be.
Well, Michelle, this has been an awesome ramble.
Excellent.
This has been an awesome ramble. The total package of you is just absolutely wonderful. And
thanks.
The enthusiasm, the smarts, the humor, the fire, the multi-passionate experience, all of it together is just a whole lot of fun. And I appreciate you being my guest.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate being here with you today, because that was a lot of fun.
Where are people going to find you next?
Well, I have 28 links for you to go and look at.
What's the best one?
Exactly. The best one is wherever you are. So wherever your jam is, search Michelle Nedelec, and hopefully I will come up and we can connect.
Well, I want to do this again. So let's just put this conversation on hold, and we'll be back again some other time soon.
Love it.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Your Own Best Company. If you enjoyed the show, would you do me a favor and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast host? If you really love it, leave me a review or share it with your circles. If you feel like your career is reaching a dead end, or you're feeling a deep sense of dissatisfaction in your work right now, I help people discover their gifts and then find or create new opportunities that are the best fit for their talent, experience, and lifestyle. Email me at coaching@franklintaggart.com for more information. I also help people start, finish, and launch creative projects, and I offer an ongoing marketing mastermind for solopreneurs and freelancers. More information on these programs and services can be found at franklintaggart.com. Thanks again for spending this time with me.